Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. What's going on, Negotiations Ninja listeners? We've got Anthony Anarino back on the show to talk all about his new book, Elite Sales Strategies. We talk about the concept of being one-up and serving and leading your clients. And it's not what you think it is. So really, really, really interesting conversation. We also talk about triangulation strategy and really the advanced sales strategies that are required to succeed in B2B sales. Fantastic conversation, as always. Highly intellectual. Always enjoy them. I think you will as well. Have a great day. Hello, Anthony. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm outstanding, man. Thank you so much for being here.
It's been a long time since we've done this.
It has been a long time, hasn't it? Yeah, it's been too long, I feel.
I think we've done this twice, though, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah, I thought we had.
Well, you know, that should speak to the quality of the conversation that we've had, that people want to have you back.
Oh, that's nice.
Now, it may shock you, but there are some people who don't know who you are. So maybe we could get into a bit of an introduction about who you are and what you do.
You know, what's funny about that is I was at Chipotle with my wife, and we were just sitting eating in Chipotle. This is on a Friday. And a guy walks up to me and he goes, "You're Anthony Anarino." And I looked at my wife and I said, "I told you I'm famous." And we both laughed, and the guy that walked by laughed, and he knew me from the podcast. And then the next night, literally the next night, we went to the movies, and the guy standing next to me with his three kids, he said, "I read all your books." And my wife was standing right next to me, and I said, "I told you I'm famous." In the most narrowest slice of humanity.
Yeah, I'm very popular with a small group of people.
yeah, that's right. Like, anybody who's like barely like a super nerd on sales maybe would know who I am, but that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm a speaker. I'm a writer. I'm an author of now four books, actually five books, because the fifth is already done, coming out in September. And I care a lot about B2B sales.
Yeah. And that's why I love having you on, because when it comes to sales education, I count you on the top of the top. Elite Sales Strategies. There it is. I love it, man. And I want to talk around that today. So let's get into the conversation.
Sure.
The first one is this whole concept of being one up on someone. And I think a lot of people think that sales is not about serving their customers. It's about getting the sale. And that's where a lot of people struggle, I think, when they start, especially B2B sales, they start struggling when they get into B2B sales because they think it's about getting the sale. What do you say to that?
I mean, there's a couple things. Number one, the only thing that you ever have is the sales conversation. So as a salesperson, that's all you have. And I know that they think that they have a product, and I know that they think that they have a service, and that that's going to create the value. And it does, if you get through the vehicle that's the sales conversation successfully. So how do you get that successfully? Your job is to help the client understand why they need to change. Your job is to help them understand the forces and factors that they need to think about as they make decisions. They need to understand what their choices are, what the best decision would look like, and why they would choose this instead of that. And so they're trying to make a decision. They're not trying to buy anything. They're trying to make a decision about how do I get better results in the future. If you don't serve them and you don't understand that the number one thing for you to do is to create value for the other human being, they're going to find somebody else to buy from. And I don't love that that's true, but it is true. If I'm talking to you and you're giving me all kinds of insight, and you're teaching me how to make a decision, and you're helping me understand all the things that I need to know to make a good decision, and then somebody else comes in and says, "Mark, listen, I've got a product. It's the best product. Everybody that we work with says it's the best product. They say it's better than everybody else's. Our service is even better." You're differentiating in the exact same way that everybody else is differentiating. Let me tell you about my company. Let me show you these logos, our trophy case, right? As salespeople, let me tell you about our founder, legendary guy, Mark. You can't even believe his story. It's so amazing. Nothing about them at all. Nothing that's serving them. Nothing that's helping them make a decision. So the concept of one-up means I know something that you don't know, and then may I share it with you? Now that's it. So Your client is one down. Now, we have to be very careful about how we talk about these things. So I'm going to be very, very clear on what I say. And I'm going to make sure that I don't offend everybody right out of the gate, even though I might have already done that already just by saying one up. Your client's one down because they buy something occasionally. Let's say you sell ERP. Maybe to every 10 years, 15 years, they'll look at something like that. In the intervening years, they have no idea what's going on in the industry. They have no idea what's changed. And they're working from a set of false assumptions. So they're one down and I'm one up because I do it every day. And I guide people on a journey from being where they are to the better results all the time. So I'm responsible for knowing more than they do. But we have to be very careful here. So this is the part where we do a little bit of a turnaround, Mark. You're also one down. Even if you're one up, you're one down because you don't know everything. And it turns out that your client is one up when it comes to their goals, how they're going to be able to do something like this, what's going to be the right answer for them, what kind of help are they going to need. They know more about their business and what they can do and why they need to do it than we do. So now you're one down. And what we're doing is we're transferring our one-upness to the other person. So if I can teach you how to make that decision, you're going to make an informed decision because I do it every day. When I ask you to help me understand what's going on in your world, I'm becoming educated and I'm going to be less one down as you share information with me. And so this is the dynamic between the salesperson and their clients. We have to be one up for them. And then we have to be humble enough to say, I'm going to be one down and learn what I need to know to be successful in this process that we call the sales conversation.
That process of learning what you need to know to be successful, what are you looking for from the counterparty to, in order to manage that?
In the way of what do I want to know?
Yeah.
I want to know a whole bunch of things. One, I want to understand why they think they have this problem. I want to start getting an understanding of what they know and what they don't know. I have a giant list of questions. I had a conversation yesterday with about 8 people in a buying committee. There were 25 asked to be there, but only 8 of them showed up. And I had 2 pages of questions for them. And what I want to understand is what's changed in your environment that would cause you to do something different now. I want to see what they know. I'm going to have a number of conversations with them about how the process needs to work for them, but I'm also going to tell them what they need to do based on what my experience tells me. And I can tell you, one of the ways that I think about this is I had this Sherpa on Mount Everest at base camp who explained to me why I had altitude sickness and that I didn't really have altitude sickness. I was actually allergic to altitude sickness medicine that my doctor gave me. Now, this is a Sherpa, and he has yak dung under his fingernails because that's what he's using to insulate his house. He's got no high school diploma. He's got no advanced medical degree to tell me that I'm allergic to it. But he tells me I'm allergic to it, and I'm standing on base camp at 17,000 feet, and I don't feel the need to go any further up than the 17,000 feet that I'm at. I promise you, you don't need to go any higher. And so I'm listening to him talk, and I realize at that point, he's seen this before. He's seen
every
what
day. He's,
yeah, so he has his pattern recognition, and I realize he's one up. Like, he understands something that my doctor could never understand because he's never been to the Himalayas. And immediately follow his advice. I throw my altitude sickness medicine away. And then he says, you know what your problem is? That's always a good sign when somebody says, do you know what your problem is? You're like, well, there's a large list. But in this case, he said, you walk too slow and you're in the Himalayas and you got to get more oxygen into your lungs and you can't breathe the way that you do when you're at sea level. I said, okay. And I started walking faster and immediately I felt better. I got enough air into my body that it only took me maybe 10 minutes. And then I realized as I was walking around the Himalayas, you got to walk fast to get enough air in so that you can survive at that level. Now they can, and Sherpa doesn't mean guide, even though that's what we think it means. It means somebody that lives in the Himalayas. So this is one of 2 times that I had somebody teach me something that I didn't want to know. Why wouldn't you take your advice from your doctor, a medical professional that went to Ohio State, wrote you a prescription? I took it for the whole week and I felt terrible. I threw it away and I started walking faster and I felt better immediately. So that's one of those sort of things. I know something you don't know, and you know a lot of things that I don't know. So I need to know who needs to be in the room with us. What do they care about? What's the right solution going to look like for you? What kind of problems are we going to have making behavioral changes on your team? Like, I need to know a whole bunch of things to be able to be successful. And you know that if you sell, you know that you sort of just have a sense that something has to be asked. Now, how do you know that? It's your one-upness. Like, I've seen this pattern before. And so once the pattern shows up, you have a good idea of what you need to ask.
Something you said there, it strikes me as very profound, where you said, I want to know why you think you have the problem you have.
Yeah.
And so many of us are trying to understand what the problem is. And we want to understand what the problem is when we're selling into it, because we need to know so that we can solve it. But that question that you asked is really powerful, because why someone thinks they have the problem may be a better indicator of the problem that actually needs to be solved than the problem itself.
Yes, exactly. So I sold temporary staffing since I was maybe 19 years old. So that's been like 5-6 years, at least, something like that. Maybe a little bit longer than that.
A little bit longer.
Maybe a little, yeah. And I would go in and people would be like, these employees suck. They're terrible. And then I would go, okay, so you think it's external. You don't think it's you. And I had to explain to people, you're under market on pay by 30%. So that might be a contributing factor. The other thing is that your shifts are not shifts that are desirable by human beings. I had one company that had a shift that started at 3 a.m. Who wants to start at 3 a.m.? Exactly nobody, because we asked hundreds of people and they're like, no, I don't want to work that shift. Nobody wants to work it. Managers think sometimes that people are dispensable, replaceable. I can just get another one. I'll let this one go. I'll get another one until they can't get another one because their culture is so bad that I literally had one client where we would start talking about a West Side job and people would say, I already know that company. I've heard about it from my friends. I don't want to go there. And on one of their employee exit interviews that we did, somebody said, working for this company is like a cross between a kinder care and a federal penitentiary. And that was not meant as high praise.
Like, yeah, I never took it as high praise. Oh,
yeah, it was maybe the best thing I ever read to explain why they were having a problem.
Yeah.
Like when you treat people in a certain way, they don't come back. And then eventually they ran out of room and they struggled and lost their four largest accounts, which is the story I tell in the book of how I lost a $6 million account by telling the truth. But the truth at any price, even the price of the deal, there's no other way to live as far as I'm concerned.
I think that for a lot of people is very scary. When they hear something like that, they're like, wait, you're willing to go that far, even if it means losing the deal. It's interesting. I had a conversation the other day where someone was trying to make a decision around negotiation training and we didn't get selected, which is unusual. Like if we're competitive, we're going to get selected most of the time. And when we had this conversation with the client, I said to them, look, I want you to make a decision here that's helpful for your organization as best as possible. And if it means that we don't get selected, I'm okay with that decision as long as you're happy with the decision that you make and you think it's the right decision. Anyway, we go through the process. We educate the client. We end up not winning the business. We end up not securing that deal. And I spoke to the person afterwards and I said, okay, well, what was it that made you have a decision that was sort of not in our favor? And they said it was purely based on price. And at that point, I knew I made the right decision. Because if I lose out on price, I'm very okay with that. And that was, it's difficult to come to terms with that, but it's also really important because that person is going to come, they're going to come back at some point in time because I know that we're a better provider. So it may not necessarily be right away. It may be in a year from now or 2 years from now, but I know that that client is going to come back. And what you said there is so powerful that I think a lot of people need to internalize that because if you're in this for the long game, you're going to win those customers back.
100%. I've done it many, many times where somebody said your competitor offered us a better price. And then later on, they came back. I had one client. This is a horrible thing to say. My $6 million loss, I followed it the next year with another $6 million loss. I can't tell you how hard it is to get net new revenue increases when you first have to get $9 million replaced.
Yes.
Because you churn three every year. And then you have to figure out, how do I get $9 million and $1 so I can go forward a dollar? It's horrible. So the second time, there was a stakeholder that came in, took over a big company where we had a lot of revenue and decided to go with a lower priced competitor. And I had a feeling she would be back. And she was, because they were horrible. And you get what you pay for every time. Like if you pay a lot, you probably get a lot. If you pay a little, probably get a little because there's no money to invest in anything. And that's where people make mistakes in buying. Like the lower price must be the better deal. It's almost invariably the lesser of the deals. And that's why they're going to come back in the future, is because that person doesn't believe that they're creating enough value to charge more for it. And guess what? They're right. That's a hard thing for them to understand. Like, you're charging so little because you know that you don't have the ability to capture more of the value that you create for people.
And a big part of that process of going through that is teaching your prospect or your customer how to buy what it is you're selling, or how to buy the solution for the problem they're trying to solve.
Right.
And you talk about something called triangulation strategy. What do you mean by that?
This is one of these things. I'm not political, so I have to just tell everybody, like, my politics are not your politics, I promise you. I've been a libertarian since I was 17 years old, so I hate everybody equally, and I've never had a candidate run for any office that I could vote for him. So that's the nature of me. Like, I like all my freedoms. My number one value is freedom. So that's the group that I like the most, but I never have anything to do with it. In 1992, Bill Clinton ran for the presidency of the United States of America. At the time, he was running against George Bush, and Ross Perot, who was a billionaire, inserted himself into this process, which harmed George Bush. But what happened was Clinton was trying to get, his team was trying to get him to get out in front of people, knowing that he would have a really good shot of winning in 1996. Right. And it was 1992. But he hired a guy named Dick Morris, who's actually like a conservative consultant. He handled Republicans mostly. And Dick Morris said, "We're going to win this time. Like, you don't have to." What they were trying to do is get all the rumors about women out of the way. And he was like, "No, we're going to just go ahead and win now." And what he taught Clinton was, there's this playing field. You got the right and the left, right? So they're both on these sides and some people in between. And he said, "What we're going to do is we're going to go above the playing field. Now we're not a participant. We're the umpire. We're the referee. We're the moral authority. We're the one that's telling people what's true and what's right." And what he did was, in the United States at that time, there were women, they called them soccer moms, so suburban women, who were very unhappy about crime and violence. And what Clinton and Dick Morris did was they said, "Listen, the Democrats are way too soft on crime, and we have to do something about that." And so he's taking the opposite side. He's saying that this is what's wrong with them. So this is what's wrong with them. But they're super correct when it comes to social spending and making sure people have a good start of the beginning of their life, and we need to put more money there. And then he would say, the Republicans, they're not spending enough on social. We've got this gift of having no Soviet Union anymore. Right. And so we don't have to spend so much on defense, and we can now do these things. And they're wrong to hold that up, but they're right on having some fiscal responsibility so we don't run up deficits. And so he's just balancing all these things, and he's teaching by doing this. First, he's going to praise you for what you have right, and then he's going to confess your sins. So when you do this, you're saying that low price negotiation course is really good. I mean, it's a good course. It's got all the fundamentals. It's a really good choice if you can't afford to do anything better. And that's where they're really good. But the problem is that it's only going to get you so far, because you don't have all of the content that you would need to be the best negotiator that you're possible of, or your team's possible of. So that's what you do. And then you can go the other way too and say, "Mark is way too expensive. I mean, you're going to pay for things and strategies that they probably will never use." And so you can do it in both directions. But my coming out of temporary staffing and having to sell a commodity, I just wanted to get rid of all of my competitors at one time. Like, I don't want to have to go one by one. I want to just explain the models to the client so they understand how to make a decision that's in their best interest. And there's generally three or four models that you can look at. You know, there's the high end, there's the low price, there's sort of the in-betweeners that are having to fight on two fronts. If you're in like what we would call a commodity, and then a scaled commodity, the scaled commodities having to address a competitor that's got better than them. So, and then they also have to deal with the lower price. Cost, yeah. So you're getting pulled,
it's
right?
So
in
hard
both
to
ways.
Play that game. So hard to play that game.
Yeah, you want to actually be a purist and be whatever you are, and it's a lot easier from that position.
Hey folks, we're going to take a short break from this podcast to tell you all about the negotiation training that we offer at Negotiations Ninja. If you're part of a sales team, if you're part of a procurement team, if you're part of a customer service team, really, if you're part of any customer or internal facing organization where communication sometimes fails, we probably have training that's going to help you. If you're trying to figure out how to deal with conflict better, if you're trying to figure out how to get more value out of your negotiations, if you're trying to figure out how to deal with price increases, give me a call. The easiest way to be able to do that is to go straight to our website at negotiations.ninja. That's negotiations.ninja, or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn and let's set up a conversation. Would love to chat with you all about that. Let's get back to the show. The thing that is interesting to me about that discussion is when you try and teach your customer how to buy, what it is, the solution to the problem they're trying to solve, there's going to be at some point some resistance to that process because they feel like they know what's going on better than you do. And there's a tension that naturally exists there where they know the problem that they have better than anyone, and you know the solution to that problem better than anyone. And that is aligned, but often our customers don't think it's aligned. They think that they know how to buy for the problem that they are trying to solve. And that's especially true when you speak to procurement people, of which I am one. And when you speak to procurement people, how do you create that alignment so that you can teach them how to buy for that thing whilst also not offending them that they may not necessarily know how to buy that thing? Because they know the process of buying. They know how to buy things. That is their job. Procurement is like the procurement of goods and services, what they do on a day-to-day basis, and they know it very well. But they may not necessarily know how to buy the solution for the problem that their internal customer is trying to solve. So how do you not offend the procurement person in that process?
Well, I'm probably going to a little bit because it's my nature. So it'd be my nature to make them a little bit unhappy. I don't need you to love me if you're in procurement. I need the people to love me for getting them the better results. So I'm comfortable with making people uncomfortable and I'm okay with it. I'm an Enneagram 8, which means one of the people who are not conflict averse, and I'm not. So I have to tell you a quick story. The place that I found the concept of one up was a spiritual leader named Alan Watts, who, you know, Alan Watts. Okay. So Alan Watts read out loud a magazine article from Etc., written by a guy named Jay Haley. And Jay Haley was working on strategic therapy with families. And he was with Gregory Bateson, who was a polymath, and they were at Stanford University at the time. And a student of psychoanalysts, and also a patient of getting psychoanalysis, wrote a 3-volume book on the relationship between the psychoanalyst and their patients. And Jay Haley got to read it. Like almost nobody got to read it. And Jay Haley explained it. Anyway, what he discovered from reading that is that in the relationship between the person who needs help and the person who's delivering that help, is that the person who needs psychoanalysis or therapy, they want their doctor to be one up. They want the doctor to know what they need to know so that they can feel better. But at some point, they decide that they don't like that person having that. And they'll say something like, "Dr. Mark, you're a terrible human being. You're a horrible doctor. You've never helped me. I don't know why I come here. All you do is take my money and nothing good happens." And then having been taught what Freud taught people to do, which is make you lay down on a couch, put your feet up so you're not grounded, sit behind you so they can't see any reaction that you might have. And what the psychoanalyst would do is say nothing. They would say nothing at all. And then the patient would go, "Dr. Mark, I'm so sorry. You're a great doctor. This has helped me so much." And they'd put themselves back in the one down position. Well, you can't count on that in sales. You can't count on, especially a procurement person or a purchasing agent, putting themselves back in that position. So you have to help them get back into the one down position. And to help them get back into the one down position, you have to ask them a question that they can't answer. That's the first thing that you have to do. In 10 years ago, somewhere around there, I got a call from a large company in Columbus, Ohio, and they said, "We just got your note that you're not going to respond to our RFP would you mind telling us why? And I said, I don't mind telling you at all. And I said, every one of your pay rates is so far behind the market right now, no one can fill your orders. No one. Like, and we would never say yes to this because all we're going to do is disappoint you and you're going to be unhappy with the result. And he said, what do our pay rates need to look like? And I said, well, I could tell you that, but it's going to be like, there's pages of them. Like, I can't tell you that one by one. He said, would you mind coming out and sitting down and briefing us on what we have to pay to get the people? He found his way back to being one down. And now guess what? I'm not just filling out the RFP. I'm sitting with their executives, explaining to them what they have to pay to get their people. Guess who they bought from? Like, it's a game. I know something you don't know, but if I share it with you, you're no longer one down. And now you can be successful and get the results that you want. So if you ask a question that somebody can't answer, or you ask one where they actually recognize something, and you may have had this happen to you, Mark, where somebody said, you ask a question, they go, Mark, that's a great question. What they just told you is, I just learned something about me. I just learned something that's really useful for me that I wasn't aware of until just now. And that's who they buy from. I mean, so if you've ever asked that question, you want to use that one all the time and see if you can get that same reaction over. That's really what you're doing when you're selling. You're helping to educate the person or people, more likely, to make the right decision so they can get the better results. Sometimes you have to ask a question that you know they don't know the answer to, so they recognize that they're missing something. And then you might be able to help them with that. Some people are harder to teach.
Yeah, I love it, man. Super powerful. And I think there's a humility that I think comes with time, and it has come with me with time, for any kind of complex negotiation, complex sales process, complex procurement process, whatever you want to call it, where you realize very quickly that you don't know. And that process of coming to terms with the fact that you don't know something, there's something that you're missing, you don't know what it is, but asking the question of like, hey, there's something that I'm missing here, what is it, is so powerful in any kind of negotiation conversation that it almost becomes a superpower, because you're able to get to the solution a lot faster and help your customer, because our customer in procurement and sales is the same. We have the same customer. And that realization is really important.
That's right. We both have to make sure that the people who need this change get it and that it works for them. And I would tell you what it's called is intellectual humility. And so you're ignorant. We're all ignorant, which means we don't know what we don't know. Yeah. So how much of the don't know do you not know? Almost all of it. Almost all of it. Like, you know, a tiny fraction of what happens to be known, and you're not even that good at that. So that's the human condition. But if you go to somebody and you say, I need some help here, and they start transferring what they know to you and say a book, like $25 in 6 hours of your life, you can get what somebody took 20,000 hours to learn. Like, you can get it. Like, every single book you have, whoever wrote it spent so much time on it. You're literally paying them like a penny for every page that they read. You're like, it's the greatest deal on earth. And you don't have to be ignorant around the things that are important to you. If you say, I need to get better at this, it's a whole bunch of people who are one up who can fix you. And you won't have to be one down in that particular area if you study and if you practice. You got to do both of those things, especially in what we do. We're having a complex conversation about change with multiple individuals. You're going to have to practice that one. You can read about it, but you better do some work on figuring out what you learn every time you sit down with five people sitting across from you.
I am super excited about this book, but I have to ask you, and I've read your other books. The first book that I read from you was, and I don't want to botch the title, I do have it in my bookcase over here somewhere, The Only Sales Book You'll Ever Need, or something to that effect.
The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And so now I'm wondering, how many more things am I missing here, man? Did you lead me astray on the first one?
Absolutely. Absolutely, we did. It's so funny to name a book The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need with a 3-book deal. Like, the publisher knows that that's a lie. We have two more books. And literally, Will Weiser, who was with Portfolio at the time, said, no one's going to remember that when the second book comes out. Well, the second book came out 8 months later. Everybody remembered. They're like, I thought that was the only sales guy.
I thought that was the one.
And they said, I had one guy say, what's the name of your new book? This is really the only sales guide.
Yeah, really, really. We promise this time.
And we mean it this time. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not the name of the book. We're not using it.
Well, that's very exciting, man. Tell me about Outbound.
Outbound, the best conference you can ever go to if you are into sales. So I can just tell you, it's like a KISS concert in Cirque du Soleil sort of married together. All the people who you know and follow, a lot of energy. It's a different kind of, there's no pitching from the stage. Nobody's selling you anything. They're not allowed to. They're not trying to capture your name or anything with a QR code. You're not allowed to do any of that. It's just our promise is that we're going to deliver practical, tactical, actionable sales insights around prospecting, productivity, and pipeline. And that's what we deliver. It's great. We did it last year in June. We had 600 people because we weren't allowed to have more than that in this room. Everyone was 6 feet apart from the person in front of them, behind them, and on both sides. So we're still in pandemic time, but everybody showed up. And when the fire marshal came in, because we had pyrotechnics, you don't normally see pyrotechnics at a sales conference, but at ours last year you did. And the fire marshal was there. And I said, what are we going to do if people push their chairs together? And he said, nothing. That's their decision. Like, they can do that. You just have to have it set up this way. And just as I imagined, people walked in and immediately put their chairs right together. And everybody was happy. Everybody's hugging, shaking hands, the whole thing. And it was beautiful. We have a documentary that we're going to put out to show you what that looked like.
Amazing, man. And when does that happen again?
September.
September.
18th. Yeah. It's really like, I think the 21st. It's the 21st is the first main stage day. But we do 18th, 19th, 20th, all virtual. And the people who are coming also get that virtual. And then with the 21st, 22nd, 23rd will be live in Atlanta at the Georgia World Congress Center.
Phenomenal. Yeah. Really exciting. Anthony, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. Always a pleasure to have you, because I think the quality of conversation is always so high, which I always appreciate. For the listeners, just so that you know, we will link out to all of Anthony's social profiles as well as his website. Anything else that you would like to tell the listeners about?
No, but I want to tell you, I'm going to start my podcast back up and I'm going to do the other thing here where I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Let's do it.
And you're going to be highly entertaining and energetic. And we're going to talk about success when you have to negotiate.
Phenomenal. Yeah. I'm excited.
Cool.
Thank you so much again for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.